Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the website usefultrivia.com. Question number one, which instrument is used by the indigenous people of Australia to accompany ceremonial dancing and singing? Is it A, the sousaphone, B, didgeridoo, C, yebahar, or D, hydraulophone? Indigenous people of Australia instrument. And question number two, which member of the Beatles had dyslexia? Was it A, Paul McCartney, B, John Lennon, C, George Harrison, or D, Ringo Starr? The answers to these two important musical trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of September the 6th. Well, it was on this day back in 1935 that the Hoboken Four, featuring Frank Sinatra as lead singer, appeared on Major Bowes Amateur Hour on New York radio station WOR, 1935, today. And it was 44 years ago today, 1975, that Steve Anderson set a record for picking a guitar. Anderson, at age 22, picked up for 114 hours and 7 minutes. He broke the old record by more than 4 hours. 1975, today. Benny Goodman's Sing, Sing, Sing introduces our jazz music news. It's an article entitled Benny Goodman's Sing, Sing, Sing. This is published in Last FM, 13 November 2008. Sing, 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 with a swing, is a 1936 song written by Louis Prima that has become one of the definitive songs of the big band and swing era. Although written by Prima, it is often most associated with Benny Goodman. It was used in his Broadway musical Swing. On July 6, 1937, Sing, Sing, Sing was recorded in Hollywood with Benny Goodman on clarinet, Harry James on trumpet, and Gene Krupa on drums. Unlike most big band arrangements of that era, which were limited in length to about 3 minutes, so that they could be recorded on one side of a standard 10-inch 78 RPM record, the Goodman Band's version of Sing, Sing, Sing was an extended work. The 1937 recording lasted 8 minutes 43 seconds and took up both sides of a 12-inch 78. Many swing aficionados consider the definitive performance of Sing, Sing, Sing to be from Goodman's famous 1938 Carnegie Hall Jazz Concert, in a performance that was very different from both the previous year's commercial release and from subsequent performances with the Goodman Band. Goodman's solo is more introspective in the Carnegie performance, with a wider range of dynamics and colors, and with Krupa playing a peculiar accompaniment accented on the third beat of the measure behind Benny Goodman for the first half of the solo. The defining difference in the performance, however, is the following solo by pianist Jess Stacy, a four-chorus, highly chromatic, impressionistic masterpiece that sounds so different from everything that preceded it, and yet somehow worked perfectly. That solo has widely analyzed by pianists, both jazz and classical. Sing, Sing, Sing has gone on to be one of the most visible symbols of the swing era, easily accessible to rock audiences due to its big beat and showy drum break structure. It is heard everywhere from television commercials to high school marching bands. Linda Ronstadt singing Desperado introduces our rock and pop music news. An article entitled Walter Scott Asked Linda Ronstadt. This is published in Parade magazine, August 25, 2019. 10-time Grammy Award winner and Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee, Linda Ronstadt, 73, is the subject of the new documentary Linda Ronstadt, The Sound of My Voice, in theaters on September the 6th. The movie features her own recollections, archival footage, and interviews with Emmylou Harris, Don Henley, J.D. Souther, Dolly Parton, and others. Was music always your destiny? Well, I remember sitting in first grade having a hard time with arithmetic, thinking, I won't have to do arithmetic when I'm big. I'll be a singer. I didn't think about it in terms of being a star. I just thought about it as singing and getting paid to do it. Growing up in an isolated area on an Arizona ranch, was music a big part of your childhood? Well, I think music would have been a big part of my childhood no matter, because my family is musical. It was just a part of what we did, washing dishes, riding in the car, or sitting at the dining room table. My father would start singing, and we'd all jump in with harmony. You were diagnosed with Parkinson's disease in 2012, which has affected your vocal cords. Do you miss it? When people ask me if I miss singing, I don't miss performing. When anybody comes over, one of my nephews or somebody from the family, we still sit down and put our heads together and sing. That's fun. You obviously did something right along the way, because in this documentary, there are people like Emmylou Harris, Dolly Parton, Don Henley, and the list goes on, who are all a part of this and so supportive of you. Talk about your relationships with your fellow musicians. It sounds as if you weren't competitive, but collaborative. Music is inherently collaborative and cooperative and not competitive. It's a conspiracy. Jose Abreu, this guy in Venezuela that started the youth orchestra that is high quality, said, music is a conspiracy. It's a conspiracy to commit beauty. The word conspiracy comes from the Greek word conspiro, which means to breathe together. So when you're singing with somebody, you're bringing with them. So you form a conspiracy. When you started, there were very few women in rock and roll. Did you ever consider that you had a harder path to follow? Nah, I just followed the music. Sure, was there sexism in the music business? You bet. But I had pretty nice people in the band, and all they cared about was whether the music was grooving or not. We had played enough to worry about that. You showed up and kept trying to make music better. That was what mattered. At one point, you walked away from the big arenas and you wanted to explore other aspects of music, like Pirates of Penzance. Do you see yourself as being brave, or it was just something you had to do? I was not just affected by that. I just was sick of playing sporting arenas. They were unsuitable for music, and it wasn't very gratifying. In those great big arenas, there's no nuance. Subtlety doesn't carry. It's expected to be big and loud. It was hard being loud. I felt like I had a really tiny-sounding voice because the band was so loud. But a lot of people couldn't have walked away from the money that arena concerts earn. I didn't even think of the money. Duh. 40,000 people in an arena compared to 1,500 in a small theater? Congratulations, you're going to be in the next group of Kennedy Center Honors recipients. With Big Bird, I'm excited. I hope he comes. In addition to Ronstadt, the 2019 Kennedy Center honorees, which will be inducted in a ceremony December 8 in Washington, D.C., also include the PBS series Sesame Street, actress Sally Field, conductor Michael Tilson Thomas, and the band Earth, Wind, and Fire. So what does something like that mean to you, Linda? It means that basically it's all over, she laughs. It's very nice to be recognized. When I look back on my career, I don't play my records for fun. I sometimes play something to check on it or to get some reference, but I don't sit around and play my records because they make me crazy. I hear every bad note. If I hear something particularly awful, I think I never could sing anything that everything was that awful. It will wreck my week. So what I'll do is I just won't listen to it ever again. I'll just go with their assessment and let the Kennedy Center assess that overall the work was sufficient. But it's really the work that matters, not the prizes, although I'm very happy to be acknowledged. Do you still listen to the Frank Sinatra album every night, which was mentioned in the film? No, I never listened to it every night, but there was a good period when I studied it pretty hard. Now it's in my brain, and I can play it whenever I want. Your career spanned rock, pop, country, Latin, and opera. What do you see as your legacy? Rampant eclecticism. Not a great career choice, but I somehow got away with a lot of it. Any regrets? If you could have a do-over, is there something that you would change? I think I could have lived my life with more grace. Grace of movement. Grace of speech. Grace of communicating with people. Grace in living. And in local music news, we have this article entitled, UNC Professor Turns to Hip-Hop to Expand Music Education and to Change the World. This is written by Glenn McDonald, published in MyrtleBeachOnline.com on the 10th of August, 2019. As an American institution, the university campus has long been a place to bring together different people and ideas. For instance, did you hear about the time the U.S. State Department learned with UNC to promote hip-hop diplomacy? This summer, UNC Chapel Hill hosted the Carolina Hip-Hop Institute, an 11-day program dedicated to the art and sound of what is arguably the most influential style of music in contemporary popular culture. Like a stunt glove, like a box of positives, it's a plus love, as the trial flies high like a dove. The impression people might have, even if they like hip-hop, is that it's kind of novelty that we're teaching this, says Mark Katz, a professor in the UNC Music Department. But there is a very significant population of students across campus who identify with hip-hop, not just as their favorite music, but as a tool for living. He designed the program, adapting the course from his ongoing work with Next Level, an international arts diplomacy initiative he designed that's funded by the State Department's Cultural Programs Division. Over the past 5 years, Next Level has brought out a rolling interactive program of hip-hop music, dance, and art to more than 30 countries, similar to the Jazz Ambassadors program in the 1950s, in which American jazz musicians took their art form abroad. Next Level is a way to celebrate the egalitarian ethic of hip-hop around the world. The summer school course was intended to be an immersive educational version of the international program, with UN students earning up to 3 academic credit hours. In this year's inaugural program, 14 students put in 8 hours a day in one of 2 classes, beat making and hip-hop dance. Each student worked on his or her own project throughout the 2 weeks, with a final concert bringing all the elements together. Jill Staggs, program officer with the State Department's Cultural Programs Division, visited campus to see how Next Level was adapted to the college summer school experience. It's great. The way the workshops are taught, it really engages the students and helps them see the bigger picture of how their art form can reflect and relate to other issues. The summer program was a homecoming of sorts. COTS also largely designed the federal Next Level initiative, bringing the program from a series of hands-on hip-hop classes he's been teaching at UNC since 2011. It's kind of coming full circle, Kot says. I thought, why not bring Next Level back to the classroom? It just keeps building on itself. Musician and educator Kerwin Young, guest instructor of the summer beat-making class, previously worked with Kot's and Next Level. Both the international program and the UNC class proceed from the same essential impulse, he says. The article skips down. The purpose of a music department is to connect with all students who are interested in music, period, and not just a certain kind of music, he said. Jan Yap, dean of the summer school at UNC, said the Carolina Hip-Hop Institute is a perfect fit for both the music department and the summer school program as a whole. Summer school offers students courses and experiences that they can't get during the academic year, Yap said. The music department has really been the poster department for this, with programs in jazz, chamber music, and the violin symposium. Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata introduces our classical music news. It's an article entitled, Lately We've Read. It's a book review. Beethoven Unbound, The Story of the Eroica. This is by Alan S. Haley, and the review is published in WCPE's Quarter Notes, Fall 2019, and written by R.C. Speck. How can musicology resemble detective work and forensics as much as it can the study of music itself? Alan Haley shows us how in his incisive volume, Beethoven Unbound. Beginning as a graduate thesis in 1966, Beethoven Unbound reveals Haley's arguments for what exactly the origin of Beethoven's famous Eroica Symphony was. For him, it was the Prometheus theme found in earlier Beethoven works. But how does one prove that a single theme became the origin of a work which is now nearly 220 years old, especially when scholars disagree on which piece preceded which when coming from Beethoven's pen? By learning Russian, apparently. The sketchbook Beethoven used to help compose those works was acquired by a Russian count, but vanished after the October Revolution in 1917, Found later in the 20th century, it now resides in a Moscow museum where Haley studied it intensively. In Beethoven Unbound, Haley's analysis appears on three different levels intended to accommodate different degrees of interest. First, there's the evolution of the Prometheus theme itself and all the subplots that go with it. For example, Haley describes how one careless sentence from one biographer caused much trouble for a musicologist on the topic. It reads like a courtroom drama playing out in a conservatory. Second, there's the technical analysis of the music. Haley offers excerpts from the scores, an abundance of examples from the Wielhorski sketchbook to prove his points for the musically literate. Finally, he provides a treasure trove of footnotes and appendices for the completists. Alongside the comprehensive musical analysis, Haley also discusses the literary themes. Beethoven's early infatuation and later disappointment with Napoleon is well known in this context. But Haley digs deeper to discuss how Promethean themes relate more closely with the symphony. For example, in Greek myth, Prometheus' unjust punishment for giving humans fire mirrors Beethoven's unique punishment and unjust punishment of deafness for creating music. Prometheus' defiance of the gods mirrors Beethoven's as well. Further, the theme of death, which plays prominently in The Creatures of Prometheus, reappears in the symphony's second movement, which is a funeral march. Despite much missing evidence and a thicket of scholarly opinion, Alan Haley, who is a former lawyer, lays out his case impeccably. Beethoven Unbound is both first-rate scholarship and page-turning entertainment. And in country music news, we have this article entitled Tanya Tucker, Return of a Country Hellraiser. After some serious battles, the outlaw returns for a soulful comeback LP. This article is written by Joseph Hudak, published in Rolling Stone, August 2019 issue. Tucker is feeling extra motivated to score a hit lately, now that she's back in the music game. She just completed While I'm Living, her first album in 10 years, produced by Brandy Carlile and Shooter Jennings, which sets Tucker's tough country tenor against spare Americana arrangements. Carlile hopes it revives her legacy. She hasn't been given the respect she deserves, says Carlile. As she fell on hard times, I don't think she was given the same grace an artist like Waylon and Willie and Cash were given for the times that they didn't live up to their own standards. She should be lauded the same way so many of these amazing outlaw men are. The article skips down and ends with this. Tucker is hesitant to describe While I'm Living as a comeback. My least favorite word, she says, but she can't help but get sentimental when presented with her first RS cover from 1974 with the cover line, I'm Tanya Tucker, I'm 15. You're gonna hear from me. It should be 40 years later, I'm Tanya Tucker, she says, and you're still hearing from me. So how'd you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, which instrument is used by the indigenous people of Australia to accompany ceremonial dancing and singing? Was that A, the sousaphone, B, the didgeridoo, C, the yebahar, or D, hydraulophone? And the correct answer is answer B, the didgeridoo. As noted in sousaphone.com, the singing Tesla coil is sometimes called a sousaphone, theremin, or musical lightning based on a form of plasma speaker. And as noted in ClassicFM.com, the Yebahar, invented by musician Gorkem Sen, is like a sci-fi cello attached to a synthesizer that Aaron Copland stole from Stockhausen's laboratory with some drumsticks stuck on the end. And as noted in Ripley's.com, the hydraulophone uses the flow of water to make music by blocking water from flowing out of one of the more of the small holes on its surface, like you would find in a wind instrument. Finally, as noted in didgeridooproject.com, the didgeridoo is a droning Aboriginal Australian wind instrument made out of hollow wood. The first didgeridoos, played by Aboriginal people in northern Australia an estimated 40,000 years ago, were made from fallen eucalyptus branches that had been naturally hollowed out by termites. And the answer to our second question, which member of the Beatles has dyslexia? Was it A, Paul McCartney, B, John Lennon, C, George Harrison, or D, Ringo Starr? Correct answer. Answer B, John Lennon. As noted in UsefulTrivia.com, John Lennon's beautiful music with the Beatles would not have existed without his perseverance through dyslexia. Lennon excelled at art and music while attending high school, but his grades overall were poor, and he had trouble spelling. He was described as rowdy in the classroom and a troublemaker. Though he was the author of two books, it wasn't until much later in his life that Lennon discovered that he was dyslexic. MayoClinic.org describes dyslexia as a learning disorder that involves difficulty reading due to problems identifying speech sounds and learning how they relate to letters and words, decoding. Also called reading disability, dyslexia affects areas of the brain that process language. So let's close out today's program with John Lennon's Imagine.
The people living life in peace. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. And as we leave you, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Content of this program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Music Review, readily available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. Now, if you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me, Randy Thompson, at 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.
I hope someday